You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi, and I host this business talk show, which airs live on Tuesday and Wednesday afternoons at 4 p.m. If you're listening to this show as a podcast at some time in the future, I would encourage you to listen live during our broadcast times heard exclusively on octalkradio.net. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, make better decisions. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring the show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. If you'd like to learn more about Smart Business Magazine, visit their website and select Orange County in the local journals area. Their website is www.sbnonline.com. Say, if you are listening live today and you would like to join in on the conversation during the show, the easiest way to do that is find the community chat room section of octalkradio.net's website, log in with your Twitter ID, post your thoughts. My producer, Paul, will be watching them from time to time, letting me know your thoughts, and possibly, if it's appropriate, I'll bring your thoughts onto the show and we'll discuss them with our guests. We do have three guests today. If you're listening live and you're expecting my first guest to be Lisa Johnson of LBJ Flooring Incorporated, well, just hold on. She'll be with us a little bit later during the show because our first two guests are founders of Radius Power, and that is Bob Singh and Ken Ogden. So, Bob and Ken, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, guys, I would like to talk about your firm because it's an engineering-oriented firm. I know that you provide extensive line of EMI filters, and you're working with both power applications in AC and DC. And, you know, your firm's a global designer and manufacturer serving a variety of industries. So we're going to talk about kind of the diversity and your strategy that you've embarked on over the past few years to diversify your customer base. But before we get into all that conversation, maybe you guys could help our audience to understand better your mutual paths to starting Radius Power.
Well, basically, I guess it goes back to the early 80s. We both went to engineering school, graduated as electrical engineers. I was on the East Coast. Bob was on the West Coast. Obviously, we didn't know each other at that time. But in the 90s, we came together working for a major EMI filter manufacturer, designer manufacturer at that time, and that's how our relationship started. And I think we were there probably between 5 and 7 years, and it was a great place to work. We learned a lot there as well, but we really established a good rapport between the two of us. Bob was concentrated mostly in sales. I was on the East Coast heading up the engineering department. And over the course of time, as opportunity provided itself, there were changes in the corporation, changes in management, and it allowed us to come together and start Radius Power.
So obviously that was Ken talking, and I guess I'd have to ask either you, Ken, or Bob, what was it that you both saw that said, you know what, let's go out on our own and let's partner together to create a firm doing what Radius Power does today?
You know, it's probably something that maybe many people go through. You know, you hone your craft for many years. You see the pitfalls, perhaps, or the downfalls, maybe with large corporations, maybe slow responsiveness, perhaps not being able to be as quick to market, those type of things. And as we saw those things, as we talked over the course of time, and we were the ones that were sort of putting foot to pavement, we were at the customers seeing what their needs were. And so as time developed, you just develop a thought process of a new way, perhaps a better service-oriented way to meet the customer needs that are out there.
Okay. I guess I'd also like now, Bob and Kent, if you could sort of add to what I said in the open. You know, I gave a sense for what you do. People may or may not understand EMI filters, but maybe if you could, and I know that's only a part of the product line that you engineer and develop and manufacture, but could you share with our audience the products that you supply to the marketplace today?
Yeah, we primarily focus in EMI power line filters. EMI stands for electromagnetic interference. This is what we would call electronic or high frequency noise that is generated. It's unused noise or unused energy that's generated from circuits that use high frequency switching techniques to convert power. For instance, anytime you plug your computer into the wall, you have to convert the AC power to your computer to DC levels. And in that process, it creates a lot of high-frequency noise. And so our products, our core products, which are the EMI filters, address that type of noise mitigation. This is not something that is audible. Like I say, it's high-frequency, and it primarily is something that could cause problems with other electronic equipment because this noise gets into the circuits and can cause problems. We often use the common scenario where if you're in your home and you happen to have a vacuum cleaner or a microwave oven, and especially in the older days with CRT tubes, and you would turn those devices on, you would see lines in your TV. Well, those are the type of problems that our products resolve.
And we're going to be talking about your diversification strategy and how that's transforming the firm a little bit later during the interview. But one of the interesting observations or things that you guys talked about while I was there is how many times in the design of a product or a platform, the suppression of noise is really at the very end of the design cycle. It's kind of logical because as you're doing the design, you're still trying to determine how much, you know, noise and interference there is in the entire system. But I'm sure that's put some pressure or created an opportunity maybe for Radius Power that companies are getting toward the end of their design engineering project, and then they need to call in a company like yours to really help them solve these kind of technical challenges. Could you speak about that for a minute before we move on?
Yeah, that is typically, unfortunately, or I guess fortunately for us, happens in our industry, is that this noise, it is regulated either in the military, it could be in commercial applications. In our country, we have the FCC, which regulates that no equipment shall interfere with another piece of equipment. In Europe, it's known as CE, or Compliance Europe. So these are regulations that equipments have to meet. And unfortunately, in the design phase, since it has to be tested, and it's the last thing that's usually tested, customers or manufacturers will allot a certain space for a filter and say, we'll deal with it when we do the testing at the end. And unfortunately for them, many times the testing is done right before they're ready to release it to market. But what that has done for our firm, and I think what we saw too when we started the company, was that was actually an opportunity for us to be nimble, to be quick, to be able to respond to those type of things, to set up a proper prototyping facilities locally where the needs were at, where the designs were going at with our customers. And that actually has been proven to be one of the highlights of our company and gaining new business, is being ready to respond when those situations occur.
Thank you. I wonder if you would share with our audience, of all the things that you both have learned in your business experience and lessons, have you developed a guiding principle that you both share that allow you to kind of lead and grow Radius Power today?
Yeah, I believe so. We trust is one of the is probably the first and foremost trait that we've been in business for 13 years. And if it wasn't for our ability to trust each other, I don't think we would be in business today. And we have our value systems are very similar. We're fiscally conservative. We've had, over the last 13 years, we've had several downturns in the economy, not just here in the U.S., but globally, meltdowns, as some people might say. But because of our strategy of being fiscally conservative, not leveraging our company, we've been able to work through that, and actually it been able to grow through those times because we've been able to have the resources to respond. When larger companies, they tend to just retract and wait for the downturn to go by, and then they jump back in the market. So those type of things have been able to allow us to still be in business today, still be growing, and to be able to respond to these challenges. So, you know, it's trust in a common value system, and we not only trust each other in our business, but we trust each other personally.
And that, thank you for sharing that, because I'm fascinated by successful business partnerships, because as in any relationship, there's a lot of pressure on the partnership, and people do change and things can happen. But one of the common characteristics that I see of successful partnerships, and sometimes it's family businesses, other times it's business partnerships, as you two have developed, is it starts with and a different skill set, and then it continues through companies as they grow and change, that people, the partners, never seem to forget the original reason why they wanted to partner with that person, and continue to allow each other the space within the firm to do what they do well. You know, you started out by saying, Ken, that Bob's kind of on the front end of the business in the sales arena, and you as the vice president of engineering and the founder, you're really on the technical side. And even though you've gone through a lot of changes, I'm sure, over the years, it feels like you still both kind of have your areas of the company that you are responsible for.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And we both have a great respect for each other and each other's capabilities. Bob has come from when we met at in the 90s. He was running sales on the West Coast for the company we were at, but he's also strong technically. But as we come together, we know where our strengths are, and we sort of complement each other. And we're not looking to dominate the whole arena. We really are. I think, once again, our mindsets are really focused towards the end goal, and that is the customer. So, as much as possible, we do, for the most part, leave our egos at the door, and I think that is one of the reasons that we have that mutual respect and our capabilities. We allow each other to run with our capabilities. You know, Bob's in sales, but he's also strong in the operations side. We have global manufacturing, and in his past he's had experience in that, and so that has helped us greatly as well. And so when that happens, I'm more than happy to play a supporting role in that, as well as when we go to customers and there's something that's heavy technical, we usually can resolve it together. But if it's something that's more core to the product and EMI resolution, Bob is more than happy to let me take the reins and solve that issue. So seeing each other's strengths and letting each other explore those strengths to their maximum, I think that's another one of the reasons that you were saying.
Great. We're going to change directions a little bit, gentlemen. You know, as you know, I'm a proponent of collaborative thinking for business owners, CEOs, founders. I wrote the book on the power of getting together in peer groups, formal facilitated peer groups like my business partner and I lead here in Orange County. So I'm wondering if you would be comfortable sharing an experience where you benefited from the advice of outside advisors or peer business leaders or people in your industry, and help the audience understand, you know, what that impact was on Radius Power.
Well, I think initially, the concept of peer groups, we personally are not involved in any specific peer group, but that has been something that I think has always been on the back of our discussions. I know some other people in other industries and friends who are part of these peer groups, and they speak very positively about it. I think our business has been on a fast track for really since we started it, so we just haven't set that time aside. But a lot of our advice, a lot of our looking to peer groups has really come from some of our closest customers as well. One of the main things with our product is we have to compete globally from a manufacturing perspective, and that creates challenges in setting up low-cost regions and so forth. So as our customers have had to expand into, say, China or other countries, we've been able to use their expertise as well. So in a lot of ways, our customers have been probably a strong peer group for us. But that's a very interesting concept, and as you were talking about, and it's something that has always been on our back burner to be able to go to other business owners and to be able to explore, brainstorm, and throw ideas off of. And we do that with each other, but I would say up until now, our customers really have been instrumental in doing that. Some of our large customers, as we've taken their lead in going into other areas across the ocean in order to manufacture.
And we're going to talk about developing new customers in new markets in a couple minutes here on Critical Mass, the radio show. And I just want to say, Ken and Bob, as a part of being a guest on our radio show, if you're open to being a guest at one of our peer groups, because Doug and I have four of them that we lead here in Orange County, we would be happy to have you attend one to see how our members get value from the peer group experience here in Orange County.
Yeah, thank you. I think we would be interested in that.
Okay. Let's now in the direction that says, okay, every business has challenges. Could you share with us one of the challenges that you both are facing and sort of the ideas or plans that you've implemented to mitigate that relative to Radius Power?
I'll start, and if Bob has some stuff to offer, he can jump in. But I think one of the main things is related to our manufacturing. Like I say, we are a global manufacturer of our products. We have to make in areas where our customers are actually making their products. And I think one of the main challenges in that is when you cross the ocean and have to manufacture, you don't have the facility right under your nose. And so in some aspects, you're worried that you're going to lose some control. And I think one of the things that we have seen, especially with this latest downturn in the economy, we had a very large facility in India that did a lot of our products. It was our own facility went up there, and Bob was instrumental in setting that up. And we realized when the economy started to go down in 2008 through the financial market issues that we had, that we realized that we also needed to diversify our manufacturing and not have all of our manufacturing eggs as it is in one basket. So that provided a challenge, and a challenge during a downturn. But once again, I think being that the way our mindsets are, we were able to react quickly, and now we are pretty much spread around. We're in China as well. We've improved and increased our manufacturing here in the U.S. as we've gotten into higher-end products and getting into more military-type products. And India itself is still there, so we've diversified our manufacturing. And we have still more improvements to make, but I think that was a key challenge for us and a key accomplishment for us to diversify so that we're not dependent upon one local area or low-cost region area for our manufacturing.
And I'm going to now ask you to, in a minute, talk about your diversification externally in industries and clients. But before we go there, I just wanted to say from my perspective, you know, as the radio show, I am really, I've been impressed as I've learned more about your firm and how you structured it, that you have applied a very intelligent manufacturing footprint. While it brings complexity to have multiple manufacturing locations, and I couldn't agree with you more, Ken, that as you move manufacturing further away from the kind of the R&D and the development people, that you have to think that through because there are just inherent challenges in that, starting with time zones and language and culture, but in just a lot of other things as well. But the way that you have decided where to place your manufacturing based on kind of the client's requirements and your capabilities, I think for a mid-market firm, it has really been a well-thought-out approach and probably given you, as you sort of suggested, some diversity and flexibility in the business that you wouldn't have had if you had, say, retained all the manufacturing in Orange County or moved all the manufacturing offshore and didn't have any left in Orange County.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So tell us about what was the impact and how is your firm changing as you guys consciously made the decision to expand and diversify your industries and customer base? So help the audience understand sort of what industries you were in and where you've kind of moved to, and just talk about a little bit about the impact of that strategic decision?
Our product, because it pretty much goes into any type of electronic device, spans a broad range of industries. We're in consumer products. We're in military products. We're in industrial products, semiconductor, capital equipment products, and so forth. So what we have found, especially in the last 3 to 4 years, even going back as far as 2000 when we had the dot-com bust, that we realized that every time there's this bust, maybe new industries or different industries are affected with each type of downturn or recession. Back in 2000, we were basically more focused in customization. We had a few customers in the semiconductor industry, and as that industry went down, as the dot-com era bust occurred, we realized we needed to expand into standard products, and so we put a big effort forward to come up with a complete standard line that could compete out there with the larger corporations, our larger competitors. And then likewise, 3 years ago, we had a certain amount of our products were in consumer products, consumer types of equipment, fitness equipment and so forth that would go into the home. And that was really hit hard in this last recession. So once again, we sort of retooled quickly, and we expanded into the military market and to more higher end filters, that three-phase filters, very high current devices that go into solar, wind, and addresses the renewables market. So we have diversified that way, and that actually has allowed us to do a little bit more here in the U.S. With these higher end products and with the military products. But it has once again diversified us so that if a consumer market goes down, or if a different market goes down, like the semiconductors, it has a less and less of effect. So each of these industries play sort of equal percentages in our sales profiles. And so as one sort of teeters or totters and another one picks up, we're right there able to go through it and actually grow through it.
You mentioned in that renewable and solar, and I thought that was in kind of getting ready for the show when we were talking, the fact that you selected that market consciously and the dynamics of the growth within that market has really was a wise decision. Could you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, one of the things going back just before, I guess, the solar market really was starting to take off, some of our key customers were looking to get into it. So we saw the need early on, and that I think that's one of the things that is so beneficial with the type of products that we make and the customers we have, is we tend to see what's going to happen in the market before 6 months, maybe sometimes even a year before it happens into the market. So our customer base are those type of OEMs who are at the forefront of technology. So we see what's happening out there, and we saw that need coming, and we saw some of our customers starting to go into these areas. And so what we did was we developed, in addition to our customs, we developed a complete standard line to address this market. And now that the market here is in full swing, we're pretty much jumped right in without any hesitation. So, and I think from our perspective, these are products, once again, these are large products. They're, you know, 1,000 amps, 2,000 amp type products for these solar inverters and wind inverters. And they are products because of their heavy nature. They're able to be made here in the States, and we're able to basically compete a little bit better with our deliveries and so forth, because our competitors primarily have settled on low cost regions, and they don't have that diversification to be able to respond in a local manner in say in Europe or even in the U.S. because they're only doing their manufacturing say in China, Malaysia, or someplace like that. So they have a longer lead time, and are not right there at the forefront with the prototyping and so forth, especially here in the States as that solar market grows.
And I'm sure with what's going on around the world with other forms of power, you know, and the questions that'll be asked about nuclear, I'm sure there's nothing but additional energy going to be focused on, you know, solar products as a renewable, clean power source. So again, the business may see that as a, you know, further embracing of that technology as well. So I appreciate that. You know, if someone listening to the show said, hey, those guys sound interesting and that firm is interesting, how could they not, right, if they've listened to the interview, guys? But how do they find you on the web? What is your home, you know, what's your URL? How do they find you?
Well, can you give us some www.radiuspower.com, and that's one word, Radius Power. So they can find us there. They can find all of our contact information, all of our products that we standard products that we have out there. And welcome any phone calls. Like I say, we have a heavy custom base as well. So what's on our website is pretty much all of our standard offerings.
Well, Ken and Bob of Radius Power, I appreciate the time you both have spent preparing for the interview today and the information and ideas that you've given to our audience. It's been a pleasure to have you on Critical Mass, the radio show. Thank you for being a friend of the show, and welcome to our community of business leaders here in Orange County.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Have a good day.
You too.
Okay. Thoughtful interview with two thoughtful business partners. I'm glad we were able to spend some time with them. And we're going to be talking to another business partner, a family business. And that, her name is Lisa Johnson. She's the owner of her firm, LBJ Flooring. It's a family-owned and operated firm. They specialize in quality flooring and installation for residential and commercial projects throughout Southern California. We're going to be talking about a range of different topics, but I'm also going to be asking Lisa to kind of share her secrets that she's had to run her business as a successful business and one of Southern California's most prestigious flooring companies, and how she's been doing that over the past 7 years. So we're going to be back with Lisa Johnson, but first, here's a word from Smart Business Magazine.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to this edition of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. If you're interested in learning more about CEO peer groups, then check out my book, and it's available at Amazon.com. Simply type in my name, Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. You'll see the book. Order yourself a copy. And if you'd like to learn more about the peer groups that Doug and I facilitate here in Orange County, get in touch with us. You know, just because you're in business for yourself does not mean you have to be in business by yourself. Okay. Said before, second guest, well, actually our third guest, but in our second segment of Critical Mass, the radio show, our guest today is Lisa Johnson of LBJ Flooring. Lisa, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here, and I'm excited to talk about your firm. Could you just step back for a second and help us to understand what you were doing before 7 years ago you found LBJ Flooring?
Well, I was hired for a hardwood flooring European flooring manufacturing company, and I started as a customer service manager, and soon that grew into many facets, helping and overseeing several departments, and working a lot with the retail market and the contractors to help them. And, you know, the market shifted and changed after 9/11, and they started downsizing. And so my position was eliminated. And so I had a great idea. I went back to the gentleman that laid me off and asked for support as I started my own flooring company. Had a great passion for flooring, especially hardwood, because I had put it in my own home, and once I lived on wood compared to carpet or anything else, I was like, oh my God, everybody should have it. So my husband was working in corporate America for 25 years, and he had been doing flooring on the side. And that was always like our vacation money. And I said, you know, you need to get your contractor's license, and we need to start a company. And he actually thought I was pretty crazy. And so I went and got our license and did all that good stuff and went out to Home and Garden Show and met all kinds of people. And I began our flooring company, put together about 30 projects, and away we went. And here we are 7 years later.
That is such an interesting and, I would say, inspiring story, because thank you for being candid and transparent with your answer. You could have rewrote the history a little bit there, but you told us, and many people have started successful businesses under circumstances not too dissimilar to yours. So thank you. I always look for these learning moments on the radio show, and we had them in the first set of interviews, and you just gave us one right out of the gate. So thank you very much, Lisa. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Wonder if you could tell us what it is. I kind of gave a little bit on the intro of you and your firm, LBJ Flooring, but tell us from your perspective, what is it that your firm does, and what than other firms that might be in your industry?
Well, purchasing a floor for a home is pretty much an overwhelming process for most people. They walk into a retail store or a Home Depot or, you know, Lowe's and those kind of things, and you see massive amount of products. And what I try to do is take the client through the process in a way they can not so overwhelming. You know, I break it down. I find out what the needs and the needs are of the home, what kind of traffic they're going to have, what kind of, you know, they have pets, children, because I obviously want them to be in a product that's going to perform for them. And so I try and help them navigate through all the manufacturers there is and get them into the right product. And I start by giving them a free in-home estimate. I don't charge for that time, and trying to help them also. The other thing that sets us apart is all our work's done in-house by my husband and my son, and then they have a few helpers. And the people that we do have on staff are all highly skilled. They're not laborers. They're highly skilled. They're paid very well. They're insured. And they've got complete ownership of the job. They're not happy till the customer's happy.
Lisa, I have to ask you this. You are not the first woman business owner in that I've had on Critical Mass, the radio show. We've interviewed over 300 guests here in the 2 years we've been on the air, but that is in a industry that I have to think in the back of my mind. Are you seeing many other women business owners of flooring companies, or is that something that is a point of differentiation for LBJ Flooring, the fact that you are so prominent? I mean, I told you earlier today, I love your new videos that you have up on your website and the way that your personality comes through on that. So I'm just curious, are you in amongst a lot of other women that are doing what you're doing, or is that a point of differentiation for your firm?
I guess it would be. I don't know. I never looked at it that way, but I guess it would be. I really don't see a lot of women contractors and putting flooring projects together. I think that makes it easier for homeowners. Usually the women are making the decision on the color and the style and the design of a home. And so it might make it, I think it's easier for them to talk to me and to figure out what direction they need to go.
I think you're right. I mean, I could see how that would be a real opportunity and potential advantage for the firm. I'm wondering if I could ask you to look in a little different direction and answer a kind of question in a different area. It's a question that I've been asking our guests for quite a number of months now, and it's one that I always enjoy the answer, so no pressure, but
okay.
Could you discuss with us, what is your guiding principle that you're using to, over the 7 years, to kind of lead and build LBJ Flooring?
Well, I think there's a couple things. One is extreme customer service. I think that that's something that's been lost in the industry over time, and I think service is everything, and dotting every I and crossing every T all the way through the project from start to finish. And in continuing our educational process, and always giving something back. You know, I always try and give a I always try and over-deliver in everything I do.
Well, you know, the industry you're in and the service and products that you supply are such a visible, you know, the outcome is so visible to people. I mean, you're putting in beautiful flooring for people, and I mean that takes on its own kind of, I would think, its own sort of pressure, just because, you know, people want to show it off. They're going to be looking at it all the time. They're going to be maybe somewhat sensitive to any blemish or thing that's not quite right. So I've got to believe that having your focus on extreme customer service maybe helps them through that process a bit, because of the nature of the product and service that you provide. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nobody wants to have to worry about if the floor is put in properly, or they don't want a blemish on it. It is flooring. It is walked on. It is going to, you know, show wear and tear at some point. But when we walk out, we try and be as close to perfect as possible. So they don't have to. We really, our whole business has been built on referrals. Until the internet's kind of taken off lately, but pretty much it's all been referral based since the beginning, and I've never advertised or anything like that. So I have to do it right the first time.
And I think for the type of product and service that you provide, the true quality of the job isn't always apparent initially. It is over time. You know, how well does it hold up? How well does it, you know, adhere? I mean, there's a lot of issues that on first blush, it may cosmetically look beautiful, but the real quality in my experience, and maybe again, I'm a little bit off base here, but just trying to understand where you are and being empathetic to your business model, it's got to be in those service calls that happen 6 months or a year later when people are having or not having an issue, which in your case is probably a contributor to why so much of your business is coming through referrals.
Yes, it is.
Okay. You know, I wrote a book on the power of peer groups. I talked about it a little bit before you came on the show. I believe that business leaders make better decisions when they surround themselves consciously with other business owners, and family business, non-family business. That's why I do this radio show. I mean, it's a chance to get your voice out into the community and hopefully help people that are in our listening audience today and in the future. So I'm just wondering if you could talk about maybe a time when peers, either peers that you know that are business owners, have kind of helped you with your business decisions.
Being in the flooring contracting business over the years, we've met a lot of other people in the same type of business. We've consulted with them in many times when we were going to try and there was a time where our business was out of our home before we got a building, and those were big decisions. We consulted with other business owners in similar, you know, a similar business model that we had, and before we made those big leaps, it helps a lot because they can kind of pave the way of the mistakes they've made, and we continue to do that. I do some networking, have many friends that I consider my peers, and you know, they just don't hesitate to tell you the truth, and that's what I like. I'd rather have the truth than a pat on the back, you know, because I'd like to adjust and make changes necessary to continue to grow.
And you really need to hear the truth, and sometimes it's hard for family business owners or business owners, CEOs, to get unfiltered truth. And if you have people in your life that'll give you that, that's really invaluable. And having people that have been there and done that who can kind of be the business Sherpa for you and say, well, you know, if you're going to get into a building, here's the lessons that I learned. Because it's what you don't know that are can be really a challenge in a business if you make a bad decision, especially when it's something that can significantly increase your cash flow needs, your burn rate, because you're taking on a building that when you previously weren't, you know, working out of the house.
Oh, yeah. A lot more expensive than you realize once you make that change over, you know.
All right. So I see it every month in our peer groups. We had one of our meetings this morning. Just to watch how the other members can and business owners give freely of their experience and their advice and the others receive it, it's really it's kind of a good way to spend the morning for me. So thanks for sharing your experience with peer groups. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. I wouldn't mind coming in and checking them out sometime with you. So.
Okay. Well, we'd be happy to invite you in as a guest. Let me ask you if you would be comfortable sharing with the audience a current challenge facing your business and, you know, what's going on inside of LBJ Flooring to mitigate the challenge.
Well, the market's been flooded with a lot of substandard materials in the, obviously, you know, economy's been down and there's been a lot of products that have been pushed into the market that are substandard, and so I would say my challenge today is educating the consumer and taking the time to educate them and find ways to get the word out about what is and what isn't, and setting up reasonable expectation. Because somebody can wind up disappointed if the expectation isn't clarified in the beginning, you know. And so what I'm doing to try and do that is to put some videos out. I just made 6 videos. And you'll see on my website there's 2 right now, but there's 6 more to come. And I'm going to create another page. And it's just going to be on education of the market and what to look for and what not to look for and getting, you know, educating my consumers out there, because I think more people, when they go into a retail environment, they just want to make the sale. The end result isn't, they don't have the best interests of the customer. And so that's my biggest challenge right now.
I look for learning moments where the guest, and my guest right now is Lisa Johnson, owner of LBJ Flooring, gives information that's transferable. And my sense from watching the economy, being a part of the economy, and interviewing many business owners here on the show, is during these tough economic times, people are looking to get value out of their dollars, and sometimes they misread a low price or a cheaper, quote-unquote, less expensive, cheaper product as being a more valuable product, when in fact it's exact opposite of that. But that is a common challenge many business owners, where lower price / quality products are coming into market and people are thinking they're getting a great deal when really they're not, but they're just paying a lower price initially for a product. That is a hard challenge. And education, like you're doing, and again, I'm going to say it, I really enjoy the videos. I think that, you know, you can play on those. I mean, you come through well on those videos, and I would encourage more business owners to think about, how do I communicate directly with my, not just my customers, but with my prospective customers, like you're doing on your website.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't know how to get it out there, but somebody had suggested to me, well, put it on videos. People like to watch videos, and so I'm trying that. I'll let you know how that works out.
and I believe you only learn so much before you do. You really can only learn the some of the valuable lessons that you need to by trying it, learning from it, and implementing. You know, you can sit there and on the conference room or whatever in your office. But until you make the video and put it up and you get some feedback and you look at it and you hear from people, you really don't know how to make it an even better product. But the truth is, you've pushed the boat away from the dock now, and you're on that process of discovery, which is puts you ahead of other people who haven't done that. So you're to be commended for that, Lisa. I like that.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
Okay. So, you know, part of what we said we were going to talk about is asking you to share some of the secrets that you've uncovered in being able to run a successful and prestigious flooring company. Could you spend a little bit of time with our audience just kind of reflecting on that question and giving us some context?
Well, I did touch on one thing. I believe in really red hot customer service, just completely all in on service. But the second thing that I think is most important for business owners is always to be giving back. I get to work on with a lot of clients that have multi-million dollar homes, but at the end of the day, I know I feel better when I over-deliver even on those jobs, but we look for opportunities to give back as a company, and just a couple little examples. What I mean by that is recently I have a friend that works at Home Depot, and she gave this lady my name, and I went and met with her, and she lived in a trailer park, and she'd had the same carpet for 37 years, and she was elderly and on oxygen, and nobody should have been living on that carpet, and she didn't have the money. She was on Social Security to put new carpet or even some vinyl in, and I sent the guys over there, and we put a new laminate floor for her and baseboards and put some new carpet on the ramps outside. And, you know, and she still calls me all the time. She's just a really neat lady. She was from another country, didn't speak real good English. And, I made a friend of that lady, and she talks about LBJ everywhere she goes, you know. And then a lot of times, in some of the better homes, people will have brand new carpeting or carpeting that isn't even worn out. And instead of hauling that off to the dump, I try and find a home for that, somebody that needs some carpeting that's in good shape, and, go install that where it needs to go. So I try not to be wasteful, and also just giving back to the community whenever we can. And I'd say like-minded people. You know, I like to be around like-minded people that that are a lot like me, that want to go the distance and help in any way they can.
I really enjoyed, you can't see it, I'm smiling, maybe it comes through on a radio show, my producer, I see he's smiling as well. And the reason why I say that is we're not laughing at you. What I'm trying to say is, when somebody gives the secrets to their success being the qualities that you just talked about, that's not what maybe sometimes people expect to hear. But from my perspective, that is a rich lesson in how to paying it forward and seeing maybe the business in a bigger structure than just a revenue and profit engine for the family business, but something that's in the community. So I'm glad I had time on the show to ask you that question, and you had time to kind of go through your points, because I think they were valuable things for people to hear. So thank you for that, Lisa. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
All right. We only have time left to ask one last question, but it's a very important question, especially since I've been saying how great the videos are. People are probably wanting to find LBJ Flooring on the web. What is your website?
Well, it's lbjflooringinc.com. Don't forget the ink when you type it in. And some of the new videos are on the front page. And you can also find us on Facebook. You can type in either Lisa Johnson or even LBJ Flooring on Facebook. It comes up.
Okay, Lisa Johnson, owner of LBJ Flooring, Thanks for being a good sport, being on the radio program, answering my questions, and giving of your knowledge and of your business philosophy. I truly enjoyed our conversation this afternoon on Critical Mass, the radio show.
All right. Thank you, Rick. Have a great day.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
I really hope if you were listening live, you had a chance to hear both segments, because there was, in my opinion, many times that I was ringing the mental bell saying, learning moment from all three of the guests that were on the show today. So I appreciate if you were listening live to Critical Mass, the radio show, and if you're listening at as an MP3 podcast off of Apple iTunes or one of the other ways that our podcasts get promoted and made available in the world, listen to us live once and maybe chime in with your thoughts to our producer, Paul Roberts. Anyway, I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring the show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. If you'd like to learn more about Smart Business Magazine, then visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. If you'd like to learn more about our CEO peer groups and our executive coaching practice, then visit our website, which is www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. This is Rick Franzi, host of Critical Mass, the radio show, saying until the next show, I hope all your decisions move you in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, only on OCTalkRadio.net.